Hello and welcome to Cinemates, a podcast where a bunch of mates chat about cinema over some drinks. Today, we'll be discussing the Coen Brothers Oscar-winning classic, No Country for Old Men, with Grubb Clark and Cinemates CEO, Michael Sestouli. Whilst drinking some El Toro tequila mixes, we discuss the film's ambiguous ending and the amazing performances all around. So sit back and enjoy this episode of Cinemates.
We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes, it's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses. Hit it.
You want answers?
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
Open the pod bay doors, Hal.
You shall not pass!
Keep your friends close, but your enemies close.
I am nothing! No!
Fasten your seatbelts. Going to be a bumpy night.
Get busy, Larry. You get busy, Ty.
Alrighty, gentlemen. Nick, Grubb, how are we going?
Good, man. Very good.
Welcome back, Grubb.
Welcome back, Grubb.
It's been a while.
Yeah. It has.
Happy to be back.
Yeah, this was your request, and what a film it is.
What a film, man. Yeah, rewatching it yesterday, man. I was like, man, I haven't seen it in so long. Yes. I'd forgotten what happened as well. So it was
me
like
too.
Big...
Forgot what the ending's like.
Yeah.
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 So abrupt.
Abrupt.
Whoa, we'll definitely
One word,
talk about
abrupt.
End podcast.
Yeah. But before we do, quick shout out to the sponsor of this episode, El Toro Tequila, authentic Mexican tequila. Today, we are not actually drinking them, but... we're showing our support for them.
We are. It's just, it's been a bit of a long day and we don't really feel like getting back on the grogs.
No, it is a Wednesday night. But one word, 5-star rating. Who
yeah.
wants to kick it off?
I'll kick it off. I've used this word before in other movies, but it yep. just really fits again in this. My one word is harrowing. and I'll give it a 4.5.
Nice. I'll go. My one word was... mariachi, as in
yeah.
mariachi band.
Great.
Yeah.
not really any choice for that other than just...
Yeah. Fair enough. Yeah. I wish I could have one of those following me around.
When I'm scat and like
yeah,
wake up.
Yeah, yeah. Wake up on the side of the road. Yeah. Oh, there's my mariachi band.
Thank God. Yeah. but I'll give it a... I'll get a 4.5 as well.
Right.
Yeah, that's all I got.
My word was going to be grim, but I'll change it to just mortality.
Yeah.
Mm.
Okay.
Mm. Whole film.
Like that.
Whole film.
Chance.
Yeah.
That's
yeah,
another
chance
word.
Chance.
Yeah.
Yeah. Multiple words to describe a brilliant film, but I'll also give it a 4.5. So
nice.
Yeah, 4.5
all across the board. It was based off a book, which I haven't read, Cormac McCarthy.
Yeah. Mm.
I didn't realize that until rewatching it.
Yeah,
Cormac McCarthy also did The Road. If anyone's seen that movie or
have not,
that is a harrowing, harrowing film, but good as well.
Mm.
One word for that would be bleak, for bleak. Sure. Like so bleak. But that. He often writes these sort of like bleak, grim. They're very like real. If that makes sense, I don't know if that makes sense. But I feel like watching this movie, and the Coen brothers obviously directed it.
Yeah,
yeah.
It seemed very, if a modern Western were to happen, like the sort of Wild West, even though it is set in the 80s, it's sort of like a Western, but it just seems so real, everything that happens. There's no...
like it could happen.
It could happen. And there's also, it's not very glittered up and Hollywood violent, if that makes sense. There's also no music.
Yes, I looked it up. Yeah, yeah. I looked it up because I was watching the film. There's like two Johnny Cash songs I remember like registering in it.
There's no score.
There is the score at being the non-diegetic music is 16 minutes long and the film is 2 hours.
Yeah.
So there's that much of the film, which is – there's a lot of silence. There's a lot of ambience in like the Texan desert.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's
but
crazy.
Just on in a broader sense, I know we'll dive in more with scenes. It does such a good job at building so much tension.
Oh my God.
With no flashy, it's just silence.
Yeah.
And there's times because obviously it opens with Anton Chigurh being a ruthless killer.
Yeah.
So you know this guy just is a psychopath, doesn't hold back,
yeah.
strangles that poor police officer to death.
With handcuffs.
With the handcuffs. Yeah. And then from then on, it because it starts with that, any time that Anton is interacting with another person, you just don't know if he's just going to pop
kill
someone.
Yeah.
You just don't, like that. You just don't know.
So he's so on edge the whole time. He could he like leaves a lot to chance, as I'm sure we'll get into.
Yeah.
But you really don't know what's going to happen with him, and I think that makes him arguably one of the better like movie villains ever.
Sure.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And one of the things I noticed from the outset is that there's a lot of violence in the film. Like the film is a thriller, and there's a lot of violence, but it's not glamorized in the way that you get from a typical thriller film.
Yeah.
There's not heaps of blood and heaps of gore. It's not like a Texas Chainsaw Massacre. It's just like brutal. Brutal.
So brutal.
Like every time some character dies, you're like, oh, fuck. That is tough.
Even like to begin with, you see him like washing his wrists that have obviously been cut because he's strangled the cop with his handcuffs. And then he pulls a poor, innocent man over to the side of the road and just pops him with the, like, cow stunner.
The easiest kill
He's like, hold
ever.
Still.
And just hold still. The guys, obviously, everyone there is so friendly. The other guy who stops on the side of the road.
So
like,
nice.
The chicken guy to steal his truck. They're all just so nice to him. And he just goes, hang on a sec. I actually need to kill you. Just come here for a sec. Actually, do you mind?
But it's also so funny. Like, it's hilarious. The murder weapon being the what is it? It's like a captive bolt stunner. I looked it up.
Yeah.
So it's like it's meant to stun animals before you murder them.
Yeah.
But the way when Chigurh first gets out of the car and he's carrying this oxygen tank, you are the guy being pulled over, just looking in your rear vision mirror.
Hang on.
I'd be like, no, I'm absolutely not today,
driving
officer.
Off.
I'm not risking.
I've had a horrible day.
I'm going to go for the car chase. That's so, that's my.
Actually, on second thought, no.
No one really blinks an eye of the car people that see that.
They're all just so trusting. And again,
it's like, I'm going to assist you.
Yeah.
It's
yeah,
like,
yeah.
No.
Yeah.
No. Oh, hey, here's some oxygen. Yeah.
Oh, now who's this nice fella? I might just go talk to him. And then
sorry, sir. Bang. I saw you were quite breathless and I brought my oxygen tank.
That's the other thing is the setting is great.
Mm.
It's Texas.
Yep.
Yeah.
They do that so well. Obviously set in the 1980s, but filmed in 2007 was when it was released. They did such a good job with the sets and the cars and the costumes and everything. Also, like Anton Chigurh's hair,
so crazy,
it's so wild.
It looks so weird.
He looks like the biggest virgin ever.
Yeah,
but like, does.
Apparently, Javier Bardem apparently said, "I'm not gonna get laid for for like 6 months after this." Yeah. He was saying that to the Coen brothers when they were like, "Here you go, mate.
Yeah,
enjoy this week.
Enjoy this, dude." Yeah,
yeah. Very interesting choice on that.
Very interesting choice. But I love as well all of the accents, like the southern drawl.
Mm.
Especially what's his name?
Josh Brolin.
Llewellyn?
Tommy Lee Jones.
Oh
yeah.
His character, who's sort of like a
Officer Moss. I forgot his first name. Yeah.
Isn't it? I think it's Ed Tom Bell.
Oh, sorry. Llewellyn Moss.
Llewellyn Moss is the
character.
And I love his acting in it. Like he is obviously outstanding.
Mm.
His character is a bit weird and I really didn't get the ending. I'll ask you guys, you know, later on what we thought of the ending.
Yep.
But I'd like to touch on a few things quickly before you go in. Obviously, the Llewellyn Moss's character, he's a good guy. Like he's a good character. Obviously, he stumbles across the money, but then he goes back, which is ultimately his downfall. He goes back to give the guy water.
Yeah.
And then that leads into just the whole absolute stinker of a few days for him.
Mm.
You know, when he opens the door and there is the guy who's still alive from the gunfight.
Yeah.
He
Mexican cartel man.
The Mexican
cartel.
He says something, Lobos. He's like, oh, the Lobos. And I looked it up. It translates to, there are wolves nearby. Mm. So I thought that was interesting after like watching that scene because he's going like, there's like, watch out. He's looking out for him saying, there are wolves nearby, watch
also
out.
Also the name of LeBron James's tequila brand.
Lobos. Very fitting.
There's definitely a lot of parallels I see
with LeBron James and the film.
He's a killer.
Yeah. Surely he didn't think that the guy would still be alive because he goes back like at nighttime.
It's weird.
He's playing as conscious.
Yeah.
He has that weird scene with Carla Jean, his wife.
She is the definition of damsel in distress.
Yes. Yeah. Oh my God. She's just like,
what are you doing that
yeah,
for?
Literally. Yeah, literally. And he said, I remember that there's one scene before he goes out and he says to her, he says, if I don't come back, tell mother I love her. And then she pauses for a moment. She says, Llewellyn, your mother's dead. And he just says, well, then I guess I'll tell her myself.
Yeah. And you're like,
cold. This is not going to be
cold.
Good.
Yeah.
Be good.
Yeah, but even the way that sort of when he goes back, realizes the guy's been shot and looks up at his truck, the truck's all good, looks back and then looks up again and it's so dark.
Mm.
And again, back to your sense of like realism, you're there in his shoes, looks back up and there's another truck there and you're like, oh shit. Mm. They come down, they start chasing him and when he sort of outruns the car in the night and goes down into the river and the dog is following him, which is just swimming after him. Like imagine a dog swimming after you.
What a loyal pooch. Like obviously the cartel have trained him well.
Yes. Yeah.
But yeah, that would be a grim ending.
So grim. But the tension in that, like he gets out of the water, the gun's obviously wet, he has to dry the gun, load it, and then just in time
gets it.
And that's the start of the movie and you're locked in.
I think
it feels like that whole first 20 minutes is just kind of just the intro of the film. And you're like, okay, these are the stakes.
Yeah. For me, the most iconic scene, which really says a lot about Anton Chigurh's character, is like the first gas station scene where he just needs to fill up the car with gas. He's not looking to kill. And then as soon as the gas station person says, oh, I noticed you came from, I don't know, like El Paso way or something. He knows exactly where he came from and he doesn't want to. He wants to cover his tracks. So then he immediately starts pressuring him.
Yeah.
Mm. And the guy starts to crumble and say, oh, we're closing. He goes, what time do you close? About now. And he's like, what do you mean? Now's not a time. Yeah. When do you close? Oh, and you're going, oh, dude.
Stop talking, man.
He calls him Friendo.
Yeah, Friendo. And then it gets to that point which he does with only a few characters where he leaves it up to chance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I think is very interesting. And there's that shot where he's just finished eating, I think it's like, some Nobby's nuts or something.
Yeah.
And he just puts the wrapper on the table and it's just expanding. And I remember the first time watching that scene, I was going, I was ready. I was ready for the gunshot. Yeah. I was ready for the thing and it doesn't come. And you just, by the end of it, you go, oh shit.
Yeah.
Wow.
I reckon that's arguably, like it's my favorite scene in the film.
Yeah.
And it's one of the better cinema scenes. I remember thinking of, like, yeah, obviously him calling him Friendo is just, like, I'm pissing myself when he does that. But for some reason, Javier in this scene reminds me so much of his performance in Skyfall.
Yeah.
He's this weird mix of, like, playful yet incredibly scary at the same time. And he obviously loved to just fuck with Bond. Mm. The same way he messes with this guy.
Yeah. It's poor man.
Yeah. Like, he's just the poor old guy. He's just like, he said something so innocent and he's just like completely, and he's like in complete control the whole time.
The whole scene. And it just goes to show that you don't need a big action scene or CGI or any special effects to make a really tense scene. It's just good acting.
Yeah.
At its core, which is really important.
Yeah, I think back to what you said with it being one of the like best villains. Like we at this point, if you've never seen it, you don't know what his name is. All you know is that he's just so insanely brutal. He's killed all these people.
It's like the Mexican Joker.
Yeah, literally.
Yeah,
literally.
But like they say that Chigurh is like one of the most like real depictions of a psychopath.
Yeah.
And we see that in him, like he gets annoyed by a guy like knowing which way he came from and like making some
so calculated. He knows.
Yeah. He knows
everything. And even when he's injured and has to blow up the car to cause a distraction to get painkillers and stuff to fix his leg.
Yeah.
It's you know he's done this so many times.
Yeah.
The absolute maniac. Like, it's crazy. Can I talk about a scene just quickly, which I loved, and it's the second motel scene. So so there's the first motel scene where he puts the bag in the top
vent.
Yeah, vent. In the vent, yeah.
And then Anton, by chance, there's another thing, like just happens to be driving by and the receiver goes off.
Yeah.
That's another thing that this movie touches on so much is just like chance.
Mm. Yeah.
There's that first scene. Anton goes in, kills those. It looked like
they're other cartel members. Yeah. So they're trying to hunt. It's implied that they have like a transponder themselves. Or a receiver themselves. Yeah,
which makes sense.
Yeah. With the silenced shotgun as well, which just blows them away.
Absolutely wild. And then there's the second motel scene where you don't get any of Anton's perspective. You're just looking at Brolin's perspective. And it's something so small as he's just there and he finds the receiver and then there's a little noise that happens and he's told the guy, call me if anyone else comes in.
Mm.
And then he calls him and you hear the phone ringing and you go, he's told him, there's another subtle thing. He's told him he's going to be at his desk all night until 10 in the morning and he's ringing it and it's ringing out. So he's going,
I'm fucked.
Something's wrong. Something's
smart
wrong.
Guy as well,
then,
by the way.
And then you just hear, and then you see the walk past and you're going, surely not. We haven't seen Anton.
And you hear the beeping of the receiver as well.
But you're like, surely not. He's not here. And then he goes away. And then you just see that. And you know that the other thing, you know that the knob is going to be blown off.
Yeah.
But Llewellyn Moss doesn't know that. And you're going, get away from the door handle. It's going to hit you. I was going, he's there. Just move. If you can get a little bit of an angle there, you'll be sweet.
You're sweet. It's coming straight.
It's coming straight.
It's got a straight trajectory.
And it hits him in the chest. Ouch, first of all. But I loved that showing of perspective because that added so much more anxiety to that scene.
Yeah.
Because before you know that Anton Chigurh is coming to the motel and you're going, oh, here it goes. But the other one, you don't know. There was a shot of him ages away and then now all of a sudden he's here and you go, how the fuck did he get there? How did he find him again?
That's the other thing. Like, we've seen things already and we assume that they will happen again, but the movie does so well in everything being sort of new in a way. Like, instead of, seeing his perspective again and being like, okay, this is what he's going to do to know where Llewellyn is. Instead, we just see the shadow of the door being blocked and that's it.
Yeah.
And then
it's just simple filmmaking, but it's so effective.
Mm. Yeah. Also, following, so when he gets out of the hotel, when he jumps out the window, I love seeing the contrast between Llewellyn's, like, he's a Vietnam War vet. Mm. He'd been in Vietnam and he, like, he's doing all the classic, like, duck and cover and shoot. And Anton's just fucking walking down the street. Like, and he does not give a flying fuck. He's literally just approaching him and he ends up getting shot in the leg because of it. Like, but it gives you an insight into, like, Llewellyn Moss by no means is like a dumbass. He's very experienced and he had a good shot at probably getting out of this whole thing.
Yeah.
But Anton Chigurh is just such a psychopath that he like was so intent on getting this money that nothing is going to stop him.
Yeah. And even like when he finds a car, Llewellyn, and he's like, hey, just like don't ask any questions.
And that
drive.
Guy just gets murked. Oh, the poor bloke. Could you imagine that? Stopping for someone and then being like, oh, are you okay?
Having to drive over his limp body.
Oh, there's a gunshot in my neck now. What? Yeah. When did that happen? God, the poor bloke. I want to ask you guys a question.
Mm.
You know how Anton rocks up to that office building and shoots that guy? I was a bit lost there. Who does he shoot? Who's that guy?
Shoots the guy who was touring a Woody Harrelson's character about tracking him down. I don't know if he's like a city, he's like the city police officer or sheriff. Right. Okay.
Is it a private investigator? Or
my assumption was like, so the Mexicans have come to America to sell the drugs.
Yeah.
Mm. I'm assuming that this guy is the buyer of those drugs.
Oh, you think he's a bit corrupt?
It's gone wrong. His money's still out there, but he hasn't received the drugs. He's hired Woody Carson or whatever his name is to kill Anton so that he can get his money back.
Yeah.
But so
I wonder if he's employing the other Mexican cartel members or do you think there's just...
I think it's just a big cluster of people trying to get this money. But that's another... And then he shoots that guy and he's slowly bleeding out.
He asks him a question while he's dying.
He's asking the guy behind us. He just goes, who are you? And the guy is like, me? Are you going to kill me? That... again, just...
No,
just,
but remember what he says. He says, that depends.
Yeah.
Do you see me?
Yeah.
And he's just like...
he's standing right in front of him.
Yeah.
yeah.
And I think he lets him live on that
I think
occasion.
He does.
Yeah. yeah.
That's another like sort of ambiguous thing. Another question I had, sorry to interrupt. It's a, another thing, but I'm not sure if it implied that, and I don't know if it does, but this is something I sort of missed on my viewing because I've only seen it once recently. I had seen it ages ago, but there's this shot where Tommy Lee Jones's character sees a truck drive by and he pulls it down and it's that guy driving a bunch of bodies around.
Mm.
Is that? Does that imply that that's a cartel member and he's a bad cop, or is that guy just transporting bodies around? Like, what was the? Do you guys know?
He's transporting the dead bodies from the crime scene of the first shootout,
yep. right?
And he's like tarp or whatever is flapping.
Yeah,
it
yeah,
out.
Yeah. But what was the? I don't know.
I think he was just making sure he's like, look how fucked this whole crime was. He's just like, mate, show some decorum.
True.
Fucking okay. Make sure that the. That your tarp is covering stack of dead bodies. There must be like 20 dead people there.
Yeah. Imagine driving on the highway, like something's falling off that truck.
Oh,
oh my God, it's a cartel member.
Yeah.
Oops. But I think that's just his discovery of realizing what's going on.
Mm.
Yeah, Tommy Lee's character.
Yep. Okay.
Cool. Quick segue.
Yep.
What do we think of the like color scheme? Because it's very dull.
Mm.
Obviously, it's not exactly the classic, with the camera.
Yeah, it's the classic sort of desert bleak color tone that they love.
No one's wearing anything colorful.
No way. No, it's very, it's very like almost bland. Sepia tone.
Yeah, sepia. Yeah. And big really, sepia vibes.
Yeah, I'm getting some sepia vibes from this for sure.
Like when you hop on Instagram in like 2010, yeah, you're like, what effect should I put?
Yeah, I'm going to make this one sepia for sure. Yeah.
But do you reckon there's any like meaning behind that, or is it just the bleak?
I think it's just like another part of the storytelling.
Mm.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
And who is the cinematographer? Because
don't know.
Really good. Like quite simple. When I say simple, it's just there's no sort of like quick action things
quite
or car slow chases.
Even.
It's just slow.
It's a slow burn at
slow
times.
Burn. Yeah. But it really. Gets you by the balls the whole time. That's just, I just think that's good filmmaking.
Yeah. Llewellyn, after that night interaction, they part ways. He goes to the border, crosses over, he's been shot, and he wakes up to the mariachi band.
Well, he comes across those guys and he says, how much for the jacket?
Yeah, how much for the beer?
And the guys are really sus of him, obviously.
Yeah.
And then he says,
would you not?
I'll give you $500 and and that beer.
Yeah.
As he's just chucked over the suitcase into like some, I don't know,
bushes.
Some shrubbery.
Again, very smart from him. Like
He's a switched on guy.
He is very switched on. But the one thing that I guess it's just part of his character, but he has done so much to hang on to this money, which he found by chance, escape this guy that's trying to kill him. He doesn't really ever give a shit about
his wife.
Yeah, poor wife at home who's worried
poor
sick.
Poor Carla Jean.
Yeah.
Hasn't been there for days.
And Carla Jean's mum just being absolute yap. Yeah, just will not stop complaining.
You know how many friends I got in El Paso? Zero.
Zero. Yeah. But then something I wanted to touch on is Llewellyn Moss's death is so anticlimactic. You see it from the perspective, again, like a different perspective altogether. You see it from the perspective of the sheriff who drives in and just sees him dead. And you go, what? That's not Llewellyn, is it? And I'm like, oh, he's just, I was rooting for him.
Yeah,
you know?
Well, it's also such a like, it's a weird camera shot because you've been following this protagonist, the closest thing you have to one, the whole film. And then you kind of just see him like, lying dead in this motel room, and you only see it for a couple of seconds, and then they just kind of move on.
Yeah,
and then, it's like you're like, okay, guys, audience, abandon him, move on.
Yeah,
main focus character.
On the mix. Yeah, and then, I think that's the first time you realize that the film isn't actually about Josh Brolin's character Llewellyn. Mm. It's actually about Tommy Lee Jones.
Yeah.
And that's where the film pivots because you haven't had a lot of Tommy Lee. You've had a bit of him on the tail, a few steps behind as you do in these like kind of cat and mouse thrillers. And you see him like talking to the wife and he talks of he has this weird moment with the wife where he's talking about, he uses the analogy of trying to kill livestock while it's alive and wriggling. And he's like, even where the contest is between a man and a steer, the issue is not certain, which comes back to the chance thing. Mm. But it's also a comment on Chagur's murder weapon, the bizarre captive bolt stuff, where it's like you have to stun the animal before you kill it, because if you try and shoot it in the head, the bullet could ricochet and hit you. And I thought that was a really good choice.
You're absolutely right. All of the movie pivots towards him, and then there's, I suppose, I just quickly jump to the ending. We can jump back. But the line that he says, what was the line where he's talking to his cousin or his uncle or something? Oh, not his uncle, but
the old guy in the wheelchair. I think he's the ex. He's an ex. He's the ex sheriff,
right? Mm. And then he says that line about, I thought by this point, like, God would have found me, and he hasn't. Like, I haven't found God. And I thought that was like quite a poignant line. But again, the movie just still was for me very ambiguous, and I didn't really understand the meaning apart from the whole chance thing. That was the running theme for me that I was picking up. And again, the shot of Anton Chigurh goes through a green light. Like, you see, it says green. He didn't run a red light, but he, and then just by chance, someone's run a red light and almost killed him.
Mm.
Yeah.
And then he has to just run off, and then you don't know what happens to him. But again, like, he realizes that after he's killed the lady, the wife.
Carla Jean, Well, it's beautiful because it's implied, because you don't know. They just have their, like, tense exchange, and he's kind of uses the whole chance coin analogy again. Mm. And then as he leaves, he kind of looks at his boots.
Sure to see.
From a previous scene where he kills Woody Harrelson's character, it's so funny because he's like, this is where you establish that he doesn't like blood. Because he's like, Josh Brolin's character, to jump back, calls Woody Harrelson, Carson, to basically say, hey, I'm ready to give you the money. I'm a bit scared. And Anton Chigurh answers, and he says, oh, is Carson there? And he said, not in the way that you mean. He's like, oh, yeah, he's fucking dead. Yeah. And he, like, lifts his boots up off the floor as the blood's just, like, flowing down the
And he puts the shower curtain over his
So you pick up on all these little weird little,
just doesn't want to get blood. Yeah.
Things that he has. These little tricks, I suppose, that he has. But yeah, I think it would be, loses the effect if he's just shot the wife.
Yeah.
It's better. I think it's better that it's implied when he lays in your like, oh, fuck.
The line that I wrote down, which I thought as well was quite poignant to the theme or like the message of the film, even though I don't really clearly understand what it is, but when he's talking to the bald guy, Carson, the guy who's hired to kill him.
Carson's Woody Harrelson's
character. Yeah, Woody Harrelson. Yeah. Thank you, sorry. We're talking to Woody Harrelson's character, and he says, the rule you followed led you to this, so what was the use of the rule? Mm. So he's saying, even though you spent your life following all the rules, it's led you to me.
Yeah.
And now it's just up to chance, or now I'm just going to blow your stomach out with a shotgun. And I just thought that was an interesting line.
Yeah, well, that's the other
thing. You can do all these things in your life. You can follow all the rules, but then you might just get run over by a car or shot like that.
Yeah.
Well, and so what's the point?
Yeah, again, the rules. He talks about like the coin, it's come to this exact spot and I'm going to flip it.
Mm. It's been traveling 22 years to get here.
Yeah.
And I think that's just the message of the whole film. Like, chance leads people to certain places in certain times and... Yeah, fate is a dangerous or sometimes safe thing.
Yeah.
But I think just quickly on the shooting of the wife and how it's shot and the implications that we as viewers perceive, again, I think they only ever do one version and show us one perspective once of how Chigurh goes about his business.
Yeah.
And how we see things, and that's just another example of that, which is so refreshing because the first time you watch this, you have no idea where it's going to go and what's going to be shown to us. But like, they just do it so well.
Yeah.
And again, that exchange between the wife, like all these innocent people, like she's lost her mum to cancer, her husband to a shooting from a drug cartel.
She's like a nice.
So she's nice. A
nice lady. Innocent.
Just all this like bad stuff. Yeah. And again, it's just chance.
She's had to confront her husband's, not a husband's killer, but husband's assassin.
Yeah.
And as opposed to the petrol station guy who was happy to flip the coin, she's like, no.
Mm.
No.
And he
well, he wasn't really happy to do it. He didn't want to play the game, but he eventually he caved.
Did it, yeah.
Whereas Kylie Jean was like, I've lost everything at this point.
Yeah.
Shoot me.
Just do it.
I thought there was an interesting line. Again, like you were saying before, about how he's very playful. At the end when he says, don't put the coin in your pocket. It's your lucky, it's a lucky coin. It'll be mixed in with your other coins and become just a coin.
Yeah.
Which it is. Like, you're a Sancho, man.
You're a prick. You're
take almost your nobby's me. Nuts and fuck off.
Fuck off, dude.
Shop's closed. Get out.
Yeah, it's shut.
Fuck you.
One quick cackle that I had was when he pulls the guy over with the chickens. The guy, I was just laughing at his accent and how he spoke because he's like, well, you want an airstrip or an airport? Yeah. And he's like, well. And he just kept on saying,
you might want to go all the way to Dallas.
Well.
And then she goes, can you put the chickens out of there? What? Bang. Just hosing it out at the end of the scene.
But yeah, what a film. Any more takes?
Yeah, I've got a couple. So
go on.
Well, so I think we've touched on the theme of luck and chance.
Yep.
I think the other predominant theme, which we haven't really touched on, is from Tommy Lee Jones' perspective, which is where it comes into the ending. And you realize like he's just two steps behind the whole time and he's obviously a very capable man. I think he was a Vietnam War vet as well, which is why he cared a lot about Llewellyn, Josh Brolin's character. And he realizes at the end where he's just lost the trail, he's let Llewellyn die and he's seen the ex-sheriff and he's seen what he's become and he is a fucking miserable prick. Like he's living in some shack in the middle of nowhere, just like waiting to die essentially. And I think that's where he is forced to confront essentially what the title of the film is, which is No Country for Old Men. You've had your chance. You've lived your life. You now no longer can do the role that you thought you were born and that to play and the purpose that you thought was yours. And I think when we get to that ending scene where he's describing the two dreams that he has to his wife, I think it is ambiguous, but I did a bit of looking up and apparently, so the first dream he addresses this like ongoing delusion that he thought he was this lawman who could protect others and he's now come to the realization, well, in reality, I can't protect anyone. And you realize in this last scene that he is actually the heart and soul of the film. In the book, he's the narrator.
Okay.
And the second dream, the first dream rather, he's recounting his meeting. He meets his father and he realizes he's failed as a cop. To save Llewellyn from his bloody end. And then the second dream, he talks about how he's like riding out with his father and he realizes that he'll eventually end up where his father is too, when his father's obviously dead. So it's like his way of coming to terms with the fact that he is basically ready to die. He can no longer do the role that he thought he had to protect
that
people.
Makes so much sense. That
well, wow. Matt, that's what a bit of googling after can help.
That's good.
It works
in
beautifully because it's
because that's an interesting monologue, isn't it? And that now it's just damn, you blow my mind open.
Yeah, well,
just like Anton Chigurh does with his shotgun.
The other thing is though, he seems so like under-resourced, and they seem
he's got
so
his shitty other deputy.
Yeah, shitty deputy who gets choked out.
Yeah.
Who's like, yeah, we got him in the back. And then he gets fucking
I got it all under control. No, you don't.
But then like, yeah, he gets there late to the motel where Llewellyn gets shot. Like, yeah, he's two steps behind. I vaguely saw this when I looked it up. It's sort of about like post 9/11. They were under-resourced, at least in America, because they put all their efforts into the Iraq War.
Mm. Under-resourced in what? In terms,
just in terms of like local, national security, yeah, local right, law enforcement.
Yeah, right. Okay, that's cool. That's
but I think just that made so much more sense because it ends after he tells that second dream, and you're like, wait, what?
Yeah,
like,
yeah, we don't even know what happens to Anton. He's just been in that car accident.
He's got a big bone sticking out of him. he's got his.
You got a bone sticking out of you.
Yeah. Ow! My God, sorry.
But yeah, it does leave you thinking. And Tommy Lee is great. Did he win an Oscar for his role?
Not for this, but I looked it up. So this film obviously won Best Picture. Javier won Best Supporting Actor.
Mm-hmm.
And it also won Best Director and Best Adapted Screenplay.
Wow.
But apparently, even though Javier had much more on-screen time than Tommy Lee Jones, Tommy Lee Jones was in for Best Actor category.
Okay.
Oh, so they had, like, swapped it around. I think it was, like, the classic, oh, we know that this is, like, Javier's film, but he's got his best chance at winning in the supporting actor role, whereas Tommy Lee probably wouldn't in the Best Actor role, so they switch it around. And I think that's just a regular, like it happened this year with all the, like the Bears, the comedy apparently. And
That's interesting.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Great performances.
I think
though.
That, was this the one that put Josh Brolin on the map?
Yeah, so he was in a lot of films in the 90s, but he was never like, he never had a really cracking film. He's been in a lot of like supporting roles. Yeah. And I think he's a child actor as well.
Wow. Okay.
So he's been around a while, but I think this was the one that like he gave an incredible performance.
He was in the Goonies. Apparently, I just looked it up.
Yeah. So I think this really put him on the map, even though he must be in his like 30, 40s by this time.
Yeah. And man, does he just do such a good job. I was so happy with that. Wow. But yeah.
Yeah, great.
Does anyone have any other takes? I feel like I'm spent.
I'm pretty spent.
I've got a few fun facts learned just in terms of a couple of casting ones. So Josh Brolin wasn't the first choice for Llewellyn. Okay. Do you guys know who might have been their first choice at
Is it obvious
time?
Or not
It's
really.
Not obvious, but if you think about it, he can do the Texan role.
Okay.
I could give you a hint, but it'll give it away.
Is he a similar age to Josh Brolin?
He was a bit younger. Okay. He just gave birth to his daughter, which is why he didn't take the role. Right. But then he came back next year and he got a posthumous Oscar for his
Heath. Wow.
Yeah.
He would have been good.
Yeah, because he's done like Brokeback Mountain. He knows how to do the kind of outback.
Oh, he would have done a great job.
Yeah,
I think he might have been, I don't know, like Josh Brolin.
Brolin nailed it.
He's very rugged and Texan.
He's rugged, but like still.
He's more rugged than he.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
Like bit, not an idiot. Idiot isn't the right word, but like a bit more of a.
Southern drawl, sort of.
Yeah, I don't know what I'm trying to say, I think you guys get me.
Yeah.
Whereas Heath
making fun of Americans.
He's like, he doesn't give a shit about his wife. Like, he's a bit of a lone ranger, like, and that's what's led him to this thing. Whereas Heath, I don't know, in the characters he's played, is a bit more with it, if you
will. No, that makes sense. But I mean, he came back the next year and I wouldn't say the Joker was with it.
No, in a different way.
I totally get what you're saying.
That's an interesting one, though.
Yeah.
I think he would have definitely nailed that. All right, what else we got?
Next one. So Javier became the first Spanish actor to win an Oscar for this film.
Wow.
Do you know who the second Spanish actor to win was?
It's not recent. Selma Hayek, is it?
No, it's not Selma Hayek, but it is a woman. It is a woman.
Okay, right.
Yeah, I know that was Selma Hayek for her performance in that one episode of what was this?
Grown Ups.
No, of What's the grim one? Black Mirror.
Yeah.
Right. Oh.
Yeah. No, it's not. It's particularly relevant to Javier.
Oh, okay. Ooh. Has he played been in a film with her?
He has been in films with her, yes.
Films,
I think.
Romantically involved?
They are husband and wife.
Oh, okay. Oh right. Fuck. Well, in that case, I've got the spouse right here. Well, he's had a few, actually. Diane Lane?
No. It is. I'll just give it.
You just tell me.
It's Penelope Cruz.
Oh! Penelope.
So what a power couple.
What did she win for?
I don't know.
Wow, okay. Tell us, Nick. Talented couple.
Yeah, but what a power couple.
Yeah.
So she won an Oscar. She's great.
Fun fact on Javier, which you might have had, but it would have been so unrelated. He played for the national Spanish rugby team.
Yes,
But what was he in that?
And Daniel Craig. Huge in Spain.
Daniel Craig and him bonded over that during Skyfall, apparently.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Because Craig played a bit of English rugby in his time.
I only found out about that because I saw him speaking with a sideline reporter at the Rugby World Cup last year talking about how much he loves rugby.
That's awesome. He's such a
very nice man.
Yeah. Love to get a beer with him.
He's got a huge head too.
Yeah.
He's such an enormous head. He's a very weird looking guy.
He is. Yeah. His nose in particular.
He's fucking enormous. Yeah. One more weird one. So obviously this is best picture winner.
Mm.
It's domestically the third lowest grossing Oscar winner.
Wow.
Behind Crash and The Hurt Locker.
Wow.
What do you think about that?
I haven't seen The Hurt Locker, so I can't pass judgment.
Hurt Locker's a great
Surely movie. If a movie is coming out with Tommy Lee Jones, Woody Harrelson, Javier,
But they weren't at that time. I don't think they were big guys. Maybe Tommy Lee Jones.
Yeah,
but
Tommy Lee had been around a while.
Yeah.
And as we said, Josh Brolin wasn't. Really
did it? Do you know if it broke even or was just?
No, I think it made money, but just for an Oscar winner.
Yeah.
I also think I'm pretty sure the book only came out 2 years before the film.
Right.
And a lot of the time, adaptations come out well after once the book has
successful,
accrued a following.
Did it put the Coens on the map as well? Is that maybe why they're a bit unknown? I don't know.
No, then Coens had done a bunch of 90s films.
Yeah.
But this was definitely their only best picture winner. Definitely was the most successful.
Wow, I would not pick that.
Yeah, they nailed that.
Yeah. Mm. No, they were. Yeah,
there's excellent. Some
Burn
some
After Reading's a Coen Brothers one.
Yeah.
That's a great film. That's a
What's that silly one they did? They also did a stupid one.
Fargo?
Fargo's really good.
Big Lebowski.
Big Lebowski.
Yeah.
My least favorite film.
Yeah, really?
Yeah, I hate it. I hate it so much. I think it's so dumb. I honestly hate it. I might watch it again and have another judgment. I remember my first viewing.
I'm just the dude.
Yeah, just couldn't. It's so bad.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Cinemates. Make sure to follow us and leave a review on your chosen streaming platforms. Also, check out our Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube channel for more Cinemates content. In the spirit of reconciliation, we acknowledge Australia's First Nations people as the traditional owners and custodians of the land and pay respect to the Cammeraygal people of the Eora Nation upon whose country Cinemates is based. We honour the storytelling and culture of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander communities across Australia. Also, in the spirit of chatting with mates, remember it's always important to check in with those around you. Whether it's friends, family, or colleagues, sometimes they may be going through a hard time. Chatting with them may reassure them that they aren't alone. If you or anyone you know is ever struggling, call Lifeline on 13 11 14.